I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast, episode 194. I know that you were possibly looking for something else, maybe Skiffy and Fanti or the Cood Street Podcast or SF Signal, but you found us. Ha ha.
We mean something too, Patrick. I know. We've been doing this for a long time. I had people tell me that they really liked the show.
That is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude. You can check out his website, atfmb.com. You can follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anilio. I'm a songwriter and a composer. You can check out my music over at johnanilio.com. You can follow me on Twitter at John Anilio. And today we are happy to be joined by Rachel Bopp. She is the author of Fortune Spawn. She's also the author of The Legend of Eli Monpress, the fantasy series, and that is published under Rachel Aaron. She's also, I got a lot out, and the best-selling the author of the nonfiction writing book, 2000 to 10,000, Writing Faster, Writing Better, and Writing More of What You Love. You can find her at rachelaaron.net. You can follow her on Twitter at rachel_aaron. Rachel, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, I'm happy that, you know, we're talking a little bit about your, you know, so you have your science fiction stuff is published under Rachel Bopp, and your fantasy stuff is published under Rachel Aaron. But I'm glad your first name is Rachel for both, because we had Sarah Monette on a couple weeks ago, and she's also under Catherine Addison. So it was like, you know, real, you know, schizophrenic kind of, is this Catherine talking now? I'm glad that we could just say Rachel and you'll answer to both. So that's good. So thank you for coming on, Rachel. I really appreciate it.
That was a deliberate choice on my part.
Yeah. Yeah.
The name change was not my idea, but I'm very happy that I kept the same name, first name for both. Cause when I sign books, it's very hard because who do you sign it as? So I just signed it as Rachel, and everything works out. I'm like Madonna now.
Yeah, that's not a.
Got one name.
Singular name, Rachel. Well, as regulars of the podcast know, my name, John Anilio. Anilio is actually my middle name. It's not my legal last name. And before I decided to take that as a performing name, I had played. And if anybody's ever emailed me, my email address is 27 Summers. And for a time, as I was launching my John Anilio portion of my career, I thought of putting my music out under the name 27 Summers. I don't know. I guess Nine Inch Nails was big at the time or something. And then right before I was going to do that, I'm like, if I ever get interviewed, what are they going to call me, 27? This is stupid. Like, all right, don't do that. Yeah, there are Summers or something, and I'm like, let me at least have my first real name be, because I that's going to be confusing for me. So,
yeah,
so
see, I'm glad. My problem has always been that people have a hard time spelling my name because the X is silent. So,
yeah, I know the P A X T. But thank you for coming on the show today, and a couple weeks ago on Twitter, I had tweeted. Normally, I have a long list of people that I want to get on the show, and I still did, but I wanted to kind of get input from people that are listeners of the show, and I sort of put it out there like, hey, who would you like to see here on the podcast next? And a lot of people asked for you, a lot of people. So I was like, we got
to
try to.
That really warmed my heart. I got to say, I was very, very happy to see that.
Yeah. So I know you're the most recent trilogy of books, what's the name of the actual series? Because I know Fortune's Pawn is the first book, and what's the name of the series going under?
The name of the series is officially the Paradox series, after Devi's home planet. However, I am looking at writing more books in the Paradox universe, because Paradox is sort of the wider universe that all of this takes place in. And so when that happens, we're going to have a conundrum, because those will also be Paradox books. So that's a bridge to cross when we get there. But the official series title, as done by Orbit and agreed to by me, is Paradox. Unofficially, they're just the Devi Morris books, because she's the main character, and quite frankly, the stealer of all the shows.
I see. Now, is your editor Devi Pillay as well?
It is, and her name is pronounced Davy.
Davy, John. I told you. See, Davy is evil. And she's going to get you now. She's going to come after you, John. Next time you're at a con, you're totally getting drunk.
And and Davey is, let me tell you, that is not a lady you want mad at you.
No.
I know. I'm
sure vengeance comes subtly.
So
I know.
So,
I'm just curious, I met Davey this past. I'm sorry. Go for
it. No, go ahead, John. Go.
No, I was gonna say I met Davey this past week, and she told me she was evil at least 10 times within a 10-minute conversation.
Yes.
I know I'm evil, and I kept telling her, I don't think you're evil if you just keep – you could keep saying it. It doesn't make you – no, I'm evil. Evil. Like she,
so, Rachel, I've met Davey at several conventions, and when Merlafferty won the Campbell Award, I was heading down to the bar because SF Signal had won the Hugo. And we found out that a bunch of SF Signal fans were in the bar kind of holding an SF Signal celebration party. And so I said, well, we need to get down to the bar. Well, Mer couldn't get down there yet. She says, well, my editor Davey is down there and she's buying champagne for people. So just tell her to keep the champagne flowing until I get there. And I said, okay. So I go down to the bar and I go up to Davey and I'm like, Davey, I have a message from Mer. She's like, oh, okay, what is it? And I said, well, there was a lot of people around. There was a lot of people talking. And so I may have mixed it up, but I'm pretty sure she said for you to buy my book and publish it. And Davey looked at me. And she looked at me and I said, or she may have said, keep the champagne flowing. She said, that sounds better.
No. Well, for all her protestations that she is evil, Davey has actually been nothing but amazingly lovely to me. And I'm really, really happy to have an editor like Davey. She really, at multiple times, she was the editor who bought my very first book, The Spirit Thief, under Rachel Aaron. And she, I'm pretty sure she was actually on a family vacation at the time when my agent sent the manuscript over. And she wasn't even supposed to be working, but she read like the whole thing in the back of a car, I think driving across India. And like 4 days later, emailed back and said, I want this. And she has just been nothing but amazing ever since. And let me tell you, I've been hard for her because like I wrote epic fantasy and she was like all set up for this kind of light epic fantasy. And then I was like, well, I've got this science fiction novel. It's space opera. And she's like, we can roll with that, I guess. And, you know, and I mean, I've kind of left field, top field, underground at her, and she just keeps rolling with it.
Nice. Yeah, well, the thing is, Davey is absolutely evil. She, you know, she's made a point of having that as part of her personality, but she is also awesome.
She is very cool.
Yeah.
And I'm always so happy when she calls me.
Cool.
So we've ended the Davey is awesome portion of the podcast.
Well, it's two episodes in a row, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Before we end it, let me end cap that with Orbit is awesome. And because you hear, especially now with the Hatchet Amazon thing going on, there's a lot of mud flying on both sides. But Orbit Books is one of the most phenomenal groups of people I've ever worked with. And I thank them a lot in my books. And that's not just me sucking up to my publisher. I really, really love them. I think they're doing some really awesome stuff.
Well, so, and your publisher is the British guy?
No, Orbit is actually in the UK and the US, and Orbit US is who I am published through.
Right, but isn't there a British guy who
lives
here?
Tim Holman.
And I apologize, I keep forgetting his name. I did get to meet him in Chicago as well. And he was really nice. I liked him. He was very engaging when we chatted at the bar.
Yeah, if I can ever be kind of convinced to come out of my hermitage down here in Georgia, I would actually love to go and like hang out with the Orbit people. I probably spend the whole time being a little too like, I'm so glad to be here.
Now, are you anywhere near Atlanta?
Yeah, I grew up in Atlanta and I now live in Athens, Georgia.
Okay. So you know how you have the interstate that goes through Atlanta?
Oh yes.
And then you have the bypass that goes around it.
Yes.
What's the bypass called?
285.
285, that's right. Now, the speed limit on 285, if I'm not mistaken, was 45 miles an hour. But the cars on 285 actually do 97 miles per hour.
It's Georgia. It's a little weird.
And that little farmer's market, it's south of Atlanta. It's off of 285. I guess it's kind of famous.
I'm not really sure which one it is anymore. I haven't lived there in a while.
I went there years and years and years ago, straight from California. And this little farmer's market, the people there said, oh, we got to go to this farmer's market. They have a restaurant. It's the best restaurant. You have to go there. It's Southern food. Everybody who comes here has to go there. I said, okay. So we go to this restaurant in this farmer's market. And just like any restaurant in California, they handed us a pager and said, you know, when your table's ready, we'll call you. And I said, okay, great. So I'm holding this pager and I'm thinking to myself, you know, it's just like California. Every restaurant, you are given a pager. You have to stand in line to wait to get inside a restaurant. And then the pager goes off and then you go up. And as I'm sitting there, I'm hearing on the speakers, pager number five, your table's ready. Pager number five, your table's ready. And I thought, wait a minute, that's us. And so I walk up and I said, yeah, I'm sorry, the pager never actually went off. And they said, oh, no. We don't have the whole system to make the pagers go off. We just have the pagers. We're going to buy the rest later.
Yeah, that sounds pretty much like my state.
Come on, that's a funny story.
No, it is. It's a very funny story. I have to say that I really like living in Georgia. There's this kind of this mythos that if you're a writer, you have to live somewhere cool. Like you have to live on the West Coast or you've got to live in New Orleans. There's so many writers who live in New Orleans. It's ridiculous. Or if you have to live in New York. And I've actually found that as a professional writer, it is so much nicer to live in a smaller town where things are cheaper because writing income can be very hit and miss. It's very binge and purge. Feast and famine, I guess would be a better way to say it. And it's so nice to live in a place where the cost of living is very reasonable and you can get so much more freedom.
Well, I've talked about it before.
Do what you love to do.
Yeah, I've talked about it before. When I was living in Chattanooga, I used to go across the border down to Georgia to buy gas because there was no state tax on gas. So
that has changed.
At the time, you could get 99-cent gas in Georgia, which was awesome.
Yeah, when I was a feckless teenager, it was 87 cents a gallon, and I was like, this is how it's always going to be.
Hey, I remember when it was $2.29 in California, and now what? It's like $6.
It's crazy now. Yeah.
Anyway, now that we've gone down, and I used to stay when I would drive down to Georgia for my job. I used to stay in the Peachtree Tech area or something like that is what it was called. Anyway,
I'm very sorry.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we could tell gas stories all day, but but let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Rachel, why don't you go first? What's your pick this week?
All right. Well, the thing I have been obsessed for, actually for quite a long time, but recently got back into because I started updating again, is actually a fan fiction. And it's a fan fiction called Harry Potter and the Methods of Rationality. And the entire idea behind this fan fiction was this guy, I think his name is Ebenezer Yudkowsky. He is a artificial intelligence researcher and a armchair fan of rationality, rational thought, rational philosophy. And he wanted to tell people about rationality and teach them how to be rational and to think better. And he actually runs a website called Less Wrong. And it's all about how to be less wrong in your life. But he couldn't figure out how to get people interested in rationality. You talk to someone about rationality and their eyes glaze over, you know? So he was like, man, what's a really popular thing I can do to make people think about rationality? And he was also a giant Harry Potter fan. So he said, I'll write a Harry Potter fanfic about teaching rationality and millions of people will read it because these fanfics have millions of views. What better way to reach a giant audience who would otherwise never care? And so he wrote Harry Potter and the Methods of Rationality, and it is brilliant. It is hilarious. It is one of the most well-crafted, beautifully circular, little intricate machines of fiction I've ever seen. It stays true to the original text while at the same time being completely different. And the entire setup of the fanfic is, what if instead of being an abused little boy under the stairs who hated his foster family and ran away to Hogwarts, Harry Potter was actually raised by an Oxford professor of logic and reason and grew up reading science fiction and rationality books and was incredibly brilliant. And so you have Harry Potter, instead of being this abused kid kind of looking to escape, you have him as incredibly intelligent and quite incredibly well-read and rational. And he goes to Hogwarts. He says, this doesn't make any sense at all. And he starts applying logic, and he kind of changes the world. And he goes into Ravenclaw instead of Gryffindor. And it really is just phenomenal. And if you're a fan of Harry Potter at all, it's a really, really fun thing to read. And I've learned a lot about my own methods of thinking from it and how to be actually less wrong. And it's one of my favorite things, currently.
Where would people find that?
If you Google Harry Potter and the methods of Harry Potter and the methods of rationality, there's a million links. It's also on fanfiction.net, and it has its own website, which I think is cool. Just HP and the MO. It's just the letters of the first letter of each word, which I for some reason can't apparently do.
I think if people just Google it, that's the easiest way to find anything.
If you just type in Harry Potter rationality, it's like the first 50 links. And the best part is they actually have a Kindle feed for it. So if you have a Kindle, it'll just automatically update with new chapters, and that's how I read it.
Nice.
Cool. Very good.
I love the future we live in. It is so wonderful.
Yeah. Cool. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
My pick is... So, do you remember TweetDeck?
Sure.
I miss TweetDeck.
Yeah, well, Twitter bought TweetDeck and then basically ruined it, right?
Yes. Because they wanted to control the Twitter experience. Recently, I've adopted Google Chrome as one of my browsers. I actually still use three browsers. I'm doing Firefox, Chrome, and Safari. And because I have to have different things open in different browsers, and you can't have this, you know, multiple accounts open in one browser unless you're using some sort of client. And so I've been using TweetDeck in Chrome. Mm-hmm. And I still fucking hate it, and I want them to give me back my real TweetDeck, but it's better than a kick in the teeth, so.
Yeah.
That is a rigging endorsement.
Yeah. Isn't it? Yeah. I mean, it still gives me the columns that I want. It's just it's in a browser, and it fails and will die, you know, at once an hour. But like I said, you know, I wish that they had the standalone client still, but in a pinch, it does well in a browser, so.
You know what? I'm gonna actually change my pickup, because now I'm gonna pick something else. I don't think I've picked this recently, but have I picked Tweetbot recently, Patrick?
Not recently.
No, I picked. Okay, so I that's gonna be my pick this week is Tweetbot, but not the iOS version, but the Mac version. Now I think Tweetbot may do what you. Well, do you put Facebook into TweetDeck too, Patrick?
I used to, yes.
Yeah. Does it do that now or no?
I don't think it does.
Okay. So Tweetbot for the Mac is great. It's expensive. Really expensive. It's $20. Yeah, that is the only thing, because I almost didn't get it, but I've gotten so used to using Tweetbot on my iPhone and my iPad that I really wanted to have it for the Mac. And when I looked it up, I was like, $20? and I'm usually not one to complain about the price of apps, because I think for what they do, they're incredibly cheap, most apps. But
programs.
Yeah, of course. So I usually don't complain. The makers of Tweetbot, I think it's Tapbots. I can't think of the name of the company that makes it. But because Twitter has all of these kind of API restrictions on them, once they would get over a certain amount of users, I don't know. It would basically, their theory was, look, we actually can't have that many users for the Mac version of it, or the PC version of it. So in order for this to be worth our while to even put out, we're going to have to charge a lot, because yes, that'll prevent a lot of people from using it, but at least we'll be able to make a decent, you know, buck on it. So that was their rationale behind it. But Tweetbot is great. You can get the multiple columns, Patrick, so you can have all of your various groups and things like that. You can have your, you know, your retweets show up. The killer features for me on Tweetbot, though, are there's the mute button, which now Twitter itself has the mute button. In addition to the mute button on it, where you can mute users, and I don't know if Twitter lets you do this, you can mute them for a specific period of time. So you can mute them forever, or you can mute them for a day or a week. So if someone's like tweeting a TV show and you don't want to hear about it anymore, but you still like that person, want to follow them, you can mute them for a day. But to me, even better than the mute button is the disable retweets button. So I have a lot of people that I follow that I really like. Sometimes they get very retweet happy, and they just retweet like 20 links in a row within like a 5-minute span, and it just clogs your feed. So you can disable retweets from specific users too. So to me, I unfollowed a bunch of people months and months ago because I was following way too many people. And so I follow less than 1,000 people now. And between that and then using the mute function and the disable retweets function, Twitter's really fun and really usable for me again. So just for the mute and disable retweet function, it's good, but it's really slick. It's very Mac-like, Patrick. So it's worth checking out. It's, like I said, it's pricey, but worth it. So I'm going to pick Tweetbot.
And just to throw it out there, you know, when you have Mac and PC versions of stuff. So for example, I just did these classes where I was teaching the basics of Scrivener and advanced Scrivener. And I use the Mac version, which is ahead of the Windows version. Now, in the Windows versus PC world, that is unusual. Typically, the development happens on the Windows platform, and then they port it over to Mac, and it's a poor, sad version that no one likes, and that doesn't work quite as well. But in this case, you know, Mac is ahead of the PC version, and all these Windows users were like, well, I can't find that. I'm looking for this. I'm looking for that. You know, what do you suggest I do? And my suggestion is buy a Mac.
Easy. It's easy, everybody. You just go buy a Mac.
Well, I'm a very solidly PC girl. We're a pretty solidly PC house because my husband and I were both programmers before I started writing. And my husband is now my house husband, which is pretty awesome. I was actually desperate for Scrivener when it was Mac only. Mm-hmm. And because I wrote in Word for like 5 years, and that's like marching across Siberia. It is torrid. And Scrivener is one of the best things that ever happened to my writing career. It's so nice. I'm so happy they have it on Windows, and finally.
Even though it hasn't caught up yet with all the features.
Yeah, I'm kind of jealous, I got to admit.
Okay. And that seemed to be what was happening. And I guess the other thing is that some of the stuff isn't in the same place. They have it under different menus on the PC, which I found interesting.
Yeah, that is very weird when you're searching for help for Scrivener when something goes wrong and you find a Mac help tutorial and everything's in the wrong place. And it's like, well, this is not really useful.
Well, and I do like, since you mentioned being a programmer, I do really appreciate Literature and Latte's approach to producing the Windows version. They didn't just try to port it. They hired a Windows software developer, and they said, look, this is Scrivener. This is what it looks like. We need a Windows version. Start from scratch. Because they wanted it to work with Windows. They didn't want it to have, you know, broken features.
Yeah, and I've never had an error or a real problem with Scrivener. And it is so worth the, I think it's like $40. It's incredibly cheap for what you get.
It's amazing. It's $40, and I'm going to throw it out there. If people are interested in Scrivener and they've never tried it before, there is a free trial. There's also, for a limited time, I don't know how long it'll last, but there is a coupon code you can use. If you go to getscrivener.com and you type in my last name, all caps, you will get a discount off the regular license.
Ooh, so you've got like the inside scoop, huh?
Yes, because they like me. I do a lot of stuff for them, and I push their product. So there is a short-term discount code. So if you've never tried it and it works for PC and Windows, if you've never tried it and you're thinking about it, go to getscrivener.com and type in my last name for the coupon code.
Yeah, Scrivener has actually never contacted me, Scrivener. I promote to in my book just out of love.
Yeah. I've been working on an ebook for Scrivener, and I need to finish it and get it out there. But essentially, it's 10 crazy ways that Scrivener changed my life. So we'll see.
Cool. Well, you know what? That leads into one of the questions that I actually wanted to ask Rachel. And you know, we talked. We'd mentioned her that she writes a science fiction series and that she writes a fantasy series, but Rachel also has a nonfiction book called 2000 to 10,000, writing about writing fast. So, Rachel, so you have this book out, which has done quite well. What are in this book? What would you say are the keys to writing fast? We have a lot of people who are writers that listen to the show. So, you know, people often talk about their word count and getting their word count up. So what are the keys to getting their word count up?
Well, this is actually kind of a funny story. And it started as a blog post, and I just call it 2K to 10K, because it's just much easier to say that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it started as a story I told at Con Carolinas, I think in like 2011 maybe. And what happened was I just had my son. And I had a deadline that I had to meet. And I mapped it all out, and I'm like, if I write 4,000 words a day, I'll hit my deadline. And I quit my job at this point, and I had a babysitter who came and gave me 12 hours of writing time a week, and I'm like, I can do this. And I just kept getting 2K a day, like every day, 2,000 words a day. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. If I cannot pick up this pace, I'm going to be late delivering my manuscript, and that's really bad in publishing because you have like a window. And if you don't hit your window, you have to wait for the next window. So your book might be months late, mm-hmm. even if you only turn it in a month late.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was really getting desperate. And finally, one day, I was in this scene. And I know we've all had these scenes where you're like, you work for 3 days on the same 1,000 words, and it's just one of throw the book away. You're just so tired. You cannot make the scene work. And I was like, this is so stupid. Why is this scene not working? And I just closed my laptop and I pulled up my notepad and I just wrote the scene down. Just kind of said, this happens and this happens and this happens. Almost like I was sketching what was going to happen in the scene. And with about 5 minutes in my notebook, I figured out how to make it work. And I realized that I was being really dumb because I was doing all the really hard work of figuring out where the story should go and who should say what. And the scene in question was an argument. And I was working out the logic while I was writing. And that's the most time-consuming way to do anything, is to do it actually in the writing. So instead, I took the scene off and just wrote it out, like, this person says this, this person says this, this person says this. And in doing that, I was able to completely just strike giant sections out, move things around, without actually losing any words because I hadn't written them yet. So I basically did all the thinking part of the writing on a notepad, which took me about 5 to 10 minutes for each scene. And then I'd go in and write the scene. And when I did that, my word count literally doubled. So that's the very first kind of step, is know what you're going to write before you write it. And it sounds so obvious and so stupid. But it's like, you know, when you were in high school and they made you write an outline of your essay. It's the same sort of idea. You got to know what you're going to write before you sit down and you write it. And if you just do that, even if you change your mind in the scene and say, no, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to do this other thing, your word count will still dramatically increase. And I'm almost thinking I should, like, guarantee a doubling in word count, because I've had so many people. Like, my inbox is nothing but, oh my God, I doubled my word count. I doubled my word count. I went from 300 words a day to 1,000 words a day. And that's what it's about, not necessarily getting 10,000 words a day, but being faster than you were. And you're not like, this isn't going really fast and not paying attention. You're just separating out the thinking part of the really decision-making part of the writing from the wordcraft part of the writing. And by doing that, you save yourself a lot of time. And that right there was the big breakthrough. The other two that I, by the way, mentioned in my blog post, you can actually read almost all of this for free on the internet. You just go to rachelaron.net and click on my blog. And on the sidebar, I have kind of Rachel's greatest hits. You just go to 2K to 10K. All of this is written out much more eloquently.
And you can also click right there on the cover, and then you can click on it, the link, and it'll take you to Amazon. And just like I did, you could buy it for 99 cents. Boom, you're done.
Yeah, it's a 30,000 word ebook. It'll literally take you like 2 hours to read, but a lot of people really, really, really like it. And I actually felt kind of embarrassed putting the ebook out because I'm like, this is so obvious. But it's one of those things you never think of until someone says it, and then you're like, oh, right. So, Anyway, well, it totally changed the way I write. I went from taking 6 or more months to finish a book to, I wrote a book in 12 days. The very first Debbie book, Fortune's Pawn, I wrote that in 12 days. It would have been 9, but I decided to change from third person to first person about 6 chapters in and had to go back and fix it.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was like being drunk on success. It was the most fun I've ever had. Because when you write that fast, it's like reading. Only you get to decide everything that happens. It's like flying. It's amazing.
Mm, that's awesome. Well, I'm gonna definitely check out that book as well too. And you know, Rachel, we have to have you back on soon because unfortunately we're kind of running out of time. I just, you know, sometimes we have guests and they're so great and we're so comfortable that we, you know, just end up chatting away, and it's like, oh, it's almost over. We have to wrap it up now. And that's a bummer. So we will have to try to get you back on sooner than later. But one of the things that I wanted to ask before we do wrap it up is that, you know, the Fortune's Pawn series, which everyone seems to love, and I actually have all the books here and I'm dying to read them, and they're on my massive to be read pile and I will read them soon. But, you know, you talk about how, you know, I think this book seems to lend itself to be made into a movie or a TV show or something like that. And one of the people that I don't know if you're aware that they're aware of you, but every time I've tweeted something about you, Jonathan Warner, who's the senior producer at BioWare, always favorites it or always retweets it. So are you getting stuff made into a game, or is he just a fan of your books, or do you know anything about him at all?
Ever heard of it, but that said, BioWare, call me. I love your game.
Yeah.
I'm a giant video gamer, and if BioWare wants to work with me, I'm there.
What's your favorite series?
What's my favorite what?
Game series.
I'm really into Minecraft right now, actually.
Okay.
But I also loved, well, of course I love all the, oh my God.
I completely derailed you.
Look at David Gay. It completely
See, I'm still.
What's the freaking game that's under the water?
Oh, the.
Big Daddy.
BioShock?
BioShock, thank you. The game I have a giant poster of in the other room.
Yes.
Sorry, I get on podcasts and my brain goes on vacation.
That's okay.
But I really loved. That was one that I played. I'm actually a big JRPG fan. I mostly play, I played a lot of Suikoden. I played all Final Fantasy except for the later ones, which are really terrible. I played a lot of MMOs. We're not even going to talk about the Warcraft years.
Okay, the only question I have for you on World of Warcraft is, which side do you pick?
Oh, see, I never say that because I have fans on both sides.
Well, I don't care. I say, for the Horde!
Okay, yeah, I was on the Horde. I was a troll shaman raid healer for like 5 years, and I could heal anyone's ass off. And it was funny though, because I would get into these random raids, and I would come in and just own heal meters, and people would always call me, "Oh, bro, you're healing so good. Oh yeah, dude, you're really good." And then I'd be like, bitches, I'm a girl. I also tanked. I was a tank in a lot of raids. And you've never seen dudes backtrack so quickly as when they figure out their main tank's a girl.
Yeah.
That is funny.
Well, Shammies can do either one. But here's my raid story is that I was in a role-playing guild, and we didn't have enough people to raid. We didn't have enough people to go to Molten Core, so we made friends with other role-playing guilds, and we put them all together to get 40 people to go raid and do Molten Core. And we didn't know any better, so we had, you know, we had the raid channel, the main raid channel. We had our class channels, right? We had group chat, and then we had our role-playing chat. And so we were role playing as we were going through Molten Core, taking down all the big bosses. And when other people found out that we were role playing through Molten Core, they were stunned. They're like, how the hell? What? No one does that. And we're like, oh, well, we do. And just
we actually had exactly the same situation. We had a guild, and it was too small to do Molten Core. And so we teamed up with two other guilds. one of which was Australian. And so we had all these Australians on TeamSpeak. And one day we're all just rating. We're trying to do Guinness. And one of the guys just goes, oh, give me a second. And like, my terrible Australian accent. And goes outside and we hear shotgun blasts. And we're like, oh my God, what just happened? Did this man just murder someone? And he comes back and goes, oh, sorry about that. Had a kangaroo on the porch. So you shot it? He's like, yep. Nothing like some roo steaks on the body. And we're just all kind of stunned silence. And then we're like, well, do you have to go do something? He's like, nah, it'll keep. Let's rain. I was like, okay.
Well, and see, we didn't ever use TeamSpeak or Vent or anything because we were role players and we had, you know, women playing men characters, men playing female characters, and they didn't want to have their voices on you know, over TeamSpeak because they felt that would ruin their characters. So we just did everything in chat.
We were all very drunk. It was a lot of fun.
Did you use DKP?
Oh, yeah. We used DKP. We used the DPS meters. We did everything. I was a hunter back then when it was easy mode, and that was awesome.
Yeah, I was a mage. And we've completely lost John now. So John's just staring glassy-eyed at the screen going, I have no idea what's going
never,
on.
Never let two Warcraft people stop talking about Warcraft. It will be the end.
Well, we have to start a Splinter podcast for Patrick's gaming talks, and that's what we have to do. But unfortunately, we do have to get going. So once again, for Rachel, and I will have to try to set you up and start talking to Jonathan over at BioWare because maybe you guys can get that game happening. But once again, Rachel has both her science fiction series of books under Rachel Bach, which you can go check out, and she has her Eli Monpress fantasy series out as Rachel Aaron, as well as her nonfiction book that we spoke about. You can check all this stuff out at rachelaaron.net. You can follow her on Twitter at Rachel_Aaron. Once again, for me, you can check out my music over at johnanilio.com. You can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio, and you can check out Patrick's website, atfmb.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at atfmb. And Patrick, do you have anything else that you want to let people know before we have to go?
That's it.
All right, Rachel, thank you so much for coming. And we definitely have to have you back. That was way too short, and we need to get you back on. So I will try to get you back on sooner than later. So thank you so much for coming on today.
You are welcome. And by the way, BioWare, I have Dragon Age ready to go. So, yeah, I hear it's amazing. I've been waiting. I had to wait till I finished my book to play it because I hear it's really addictive. So if you want to send me Dragon Age 2, that would be awesome.
Cool. All right. Very good, everybody. We will see you next time.
See you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
Still here? It's over. Go home. Go.